Our investments, well, yes, we do have investments. We cashed in $200,000, so now we have the remaining balance of $430,000. $243,000 is in cash, $185,000 is in equities, and then a little bit in mutual funds. That's with that, what we currently have estimate is 32 days in reserve. The goal is to have 60 to 90 days operating expense in reserves. And again, that was out of one of the management books that you go by. And so again, we have some days in reserve, but with what I'm trained to do, you'll see why I'm asking to have that. So we do have providers that live on island. They live here, they're great providers, they're here full time. And so I just wanted you to see how many, those are the ones that actually live here on island full time and take care. They're part of the community. You could see them at all the community events. One of our providers, if not all of them, are there. And it's really exciting to finally have, I've heard we've had a lot of turnover and we had a lot of locums, so you never know who you're gonna see. But we have providers here now, full time, that are committed. They buy in homes, they're here. And I wanna try to make them happy. I wanna keep them, I wanna make that morale so everybody loves to come to work, smile and have fun. And I think we're on our way to that. We have locums that are locums, but they love it here. They
what is a locum?
Locum is a provider, sorry. I'm just going, no. Locum is a provider that you pay a little extra and they come in and they just cover a certain time. They're not a full-time provider. They don't live here. They come here. We provide housing and a car and then they're expensive to have, but we have them where they're coming back. So a lot of them have been here for how many years? So again, these guys, even though they're locums and they're part-time and they come in to cover, but they've been doing it for years, so it's really exciting. And that's Kyle's, Scott, and Paul Spencer. Paul Spencer's here now, and he's retiring at the end of December. So this is why I really want that safety net, ongoing improvements. So you hear me saying that our fee schedule is the most expensive in the state of Alaska. That's not fair. It's very expensive to live here. I want a community where they're not afraid to come in and be seen and walk out with a bill that they don't, makes you even sicker thinking of the bill than how sick you were when you came in. So again, I have the new fee schedule ready. I was hoping that I would be able to present it, but it's a 30 to 50% cut. But I have it at the Alaska Primary Care Association because what I want them to do is we already know we were the most expensive in Alaska. I want our new fee schedule. I don't want it too low. I don't want it too high. I want to make sure we're in the 50th percentile. That's my goal. So I'm waiting because I want to know exactly where do we rate. My goal is to have it at the 50th percentile. Now, how can I lower fees when we're not making budget? My goal is to build the volume back up, get people excited to come back to see us. So again, that's one of the reasons. So as soon as I get that, I will let the radio station know, and at the next, once we have it in effect, I will let the public announcements let everybody know that's in effect. But also we're doing the 50% off everything over 120. I'm trying to give back to the community. I've gave my cards out at the Safeway. It's like, if you have a problem with our billing, spread the word to come see me, because we will look at it and we will make sure it's honest and right. Next is adjusting the losses in the dispensary. It's not all roses and daisies. I mean, we are gonna do an increase, but this is one of the areas where we're losing a ton of money. As you know, prescriptions are very expensive. So we have a dispensary, not a pharmacy. So a pharmacy, you could bill insurance. The dispensary, you have to pay out of pocket. So currently, everybody that's getting a drug is normally doing a $15 flat rate. That's not even normal. That doesn't even cover the expense of the drugs in many cases. So every prescription that we dispense, we could be losing minimum, you know, $20, $30 every one we dispense. Not saying that's the case, but that's, so we're gonna the Medicaid dispensing rate. So Medicaid is, that's where you set your fee on that. So just to dispense that drug, in this, for Medicaid in the state of Alaska is $13.56. We're gonna dispense less than Medicaid rate at $13.50. It's 6 cents less, but it is less. So just so you, I want to be perfectly honest and transparent. Next, we're going to add the price of the drug. This is where we've been losing all this time. We just hired a dispensary tech, and then we got a part-time dispensary tech. So we'll have, so we can get the dispensing out timely, and we're going to make this, and this will help cover the cost as we'll quit losing that money on the per drug and then the $13.50 per dispensing fee. So that's the minimum. We're going to do cost of drug.
James, real quick, if we're going to set up a pharmacy, don't you have to have a licensed pharmacist?
A telepharmacy. This is what we're doing now. The telepharmacy, you will have a licensed pharmacist, probably in Anchorage, that it'll set up a computer screen. And so when you come in, and so you bring in a prescription from your doctor in Anchorage, and it's IV, or it's Flexeril, 10 milligrams. So you give that to our dispensing tech, and it's just like you do at Rite Aid. So the dispensing tech then will go to the monitor. There's that's why I'm working on our IT support too, is that they then take the prescription, they picture it, the pharmacist looks at it, then they get the drugs, they hold it under the camera, the pharmacist says, you're good, they pour it in the bottle, they do the double check with the pharmacist, and then the patient comes up, Frank, come on up, you got here, you have to talk to the pharmacist, so then there'll be a screen, the pharmacist says, hey, Frank, you got any questions on this, you know, blah, 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 boom, you're done, and you're in and out, we can bill your insurance. That's how hopefully in 3 months, if everything goes through, that'll happen. But this is in the meantime. I don't want everybody say, oh, you said you're low on your rates, but now I have to pay $33.50 for my drugs, and I used to pay $15. So I'm trying to give you, I'm not gonna put any smoke screens. I want everything transparent. So anyway, so this is in the meantime until we get the pharmacy. So anyway, so now your per drug, the minimum you're gonna pay is $33.50. So again, that's a change. And that is an increase, but also I'm not putting this in effect until our new fee schedule is. Our new fee schedule at a 30 to 50% reduction is my goal. So again, I'm holding off on this. The board already approved, but we're waiting because I want to do it right. So it's done at the same time. Next is operating the telepharmacy, which again, Frank, we just jumped ahead. But again, you don't have right now, if you need medication and you're out, you have to go see the doctor. Now the doctor can write your Lipitor times, you know, 6 months, and then when you're out every 30 days or whatever, now you don't have to see the doctor again to get it refilled until it's time for your blood test or your yearly or whatever. You could now do refills, where now with the dispensary, we don't do that unless you have mail order. You get it that way, but now if you do it, so anyway, so that's one of the. Next is the new billing company starting January 1st. Again, it's an added cost. I'm lowering rates. I'm adding my expense on my billing, but the billing company guarantees 85% collections. Right now we're running about 40, I believe it is. And they guarantee 85% in writing, and they also cut down the days in AR. So I'm projecting that patients will return to the clinic. And so that's why I'm asking, again, to have this $500,000 as a safety net. As you can see, I'm not doing any smoke screens. I'm showing you. Anybody's welcome to come see me. I think the community knows that they're more than happy. If anybody hears a complaint, please send them my way, because we cannot fix it if I don't know what's happening. I'm doing everything I can to lower the rates. I want to make it so people make us their first choice for health care. And we got a great provider staff. We got great nursing staff. We have 3 RNs now currently on step 4. 3, 4. And we got highly qualified staff. We're doing great care, and I want the community to start taking advantage of it again. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, James. This is very, very informative. Okay, Nancy, did you have any follow up before I open it up? Okay. Roger, go ahead.
I made a quick little note here. Don't set yourself up to fail. And I see you cashing in investments at 200, I think it was.
200,000.
And you got 400 left. That's only 2 years. And so I don't want to be making up that difference as a city council in 3 years. I can't. You're nodding, but I'm having trouble with even 1, 2, 3 over here, math-wise. But you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I appreciate your efforts, but I guess I'll only speak for myself, not the rest of the council. I don't think I want to see the clinic go away. So I worry about setting yourself up to fail, if that's a fair...
Well, I think, again, this $500,000 safety net gives us time to turn the ship. Because, again, we're taking that cut. I'm saying we're going to... But the thing is we do gap accounting. So we already gap analysis when we do our financials. We only say we're going to collect 40% on the dollar or something like that. And so when we balance our books, so lowering that rate, what I'm hoping instead of 40%, we're going to collect 80%. Because again, all we did previous is just raise prices. That doesn't mean you collect more. We got $1.5 million that you're never going to see. That's old, over 120 days of old debt. You're never going to collect that. That's just common knowledge. After 120 days, you can send it to collections, make your neighbor mad. That's not what we're about. I want to make it so they feel like they're getting a great service and they're happy to pay their copay or deductible. That's my goal. And also, I also am working with APIA, trying to work out, you know, possibly to get that contract with them, with the tribe. And so there's not two clinics, like I have to go upstairs to get a pass, I have to run over here, I can't do this, I can't do that. So we are working on that too. So that is another where we made, like I said, I'm hoping that this is my first A season, that with the staffing, we redone our staffing matrix. We've done a lot of stuff. So I'm hoping that we do a bigger pickup and we don't need anything. But again, that $500,000, like you said, is just a safety net so people can spread the word. You come to the clinic and you go, wow, you know what? Dr. Eric was incredible. The staff checked me in. They took care of me. I got my dispensary. Or, oh, I had a pharmacy from a prescription from over here. I went and got it filled. It's so nice to have a pharmacy on island, you know. So there's a whole bunch of what ifs. But, I mean, we're doing it on our part. So I just need, you know, again, spread the word. Let's get people in. Look, I walk the walk. I talk the talk because I'm in the community. I'm roughing. I haven't got my house egged yet. So, again, I'm out here, and I want to do the right thing. So,
Mr. Mayor, yeah. I apologize. Jim Fitch got bumped off the line, so we would like to dial him back in if we could, but it'll be beeping and stuff.
Okay.
Sorry.
We can, Dave?
Yeah, thanks, James. I really appreciate the work that you're doing to turn the clinic around, to get local people to start going back.
Welcome
there.
Welcome to AT&T's teleconference service.
To reduce fees and
please
to get that
your access
pharmacy
code, followed by
in
the
place,
sign.
I think is going to be pretty good. I appreciate your work.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, I know we held the clinic
as the host. Press
before,
star. Otherwise,
I don't say we bail them out, but we
please enter your host password followed by the pound sign.
We help them out previous years before.
There are.
And I like seeing
Jim, are you online?
Oh.
Pardon me, Bob. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Yeah, I really want...
Can you mute the music?
Can you mute? The billing department, I mentioned that before. I think the clinic loses a lot of money because of the billing department.
Absolutely.
You know, people don't get charged, and people get charged twice. It's the way it... I mean, you come in there with a receipt that you pay for it, and then you're getting a bill.
I experienced it firsthand. When we sent out the 50-50 notices... We discussed what was supposed to happen, and people are like, what are you talking about? I paid that, and we look it up, and it was owed $500, paid $500, and it was unapplied. It's like, how do you send out a bill when you have a credit? So that's when I decided at that time, again, I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I really wanted to, for them to, I didn't want to jump too fast because we were doing so much. But that was the final straw, and then I took it to the board, and our board voted, everybody voted to let's switch. Again, it's costing us an extra 3%, but it's the best 3% we could spend in our entire world, because this is a company that does nothing but FQHC billing. That's what we are, rural, fairly qualified health centers. That's all they specialize in. That's all their clients are. They will customize it. They're coming out December 14th and 15th. They're going to customize it where when you get your first bill, it's not saying you're delinquent and you're going to collections. That's the craziest thing. I'm like, how in the world is that possible? Just because the insurance finally paid and the first bill's 90 days passed, that doesn't mean the patient had their statements, you know. So again, we're going to make it. And then again, if this rolls out and it's wrong, it's going to be egg on my face. So we're going to make sure it's set up right and it's done right from the start, and we manage it on a go-forward basis so it doesn't happen. Now, if something does happen as we go live, it's new, you have to come and tell me, you know, and we'll get it fixed. But again, that's what I'm saying is we got to have communication. And I'd love to be able to have that open dialogue with all the patients on the island, because if there's something happening, we don't know about it, we can't fix it.
Thank you.
Dennis?
Yeah, thank you for that presentation. I brought up a while back a possibility of a loan, a no-interest loan over a 20-year period or, you know, something like that effect, a couple $1,000 a month to return. I guess that there wasn't, I saw a little blurb in there, but of maybe it might be a hindrance to the clinic. One question I do have for Nancy or is this $500,000, that's invested right now, getting some pretty good interest for the city, correct?
It's in our city. I'd have to defer to Clay as to exactly where the money came from, but yes, it is in our budget. And
right. What I'm thinking is being that the clinic is not using it all at once. I'd like to see maximize the interest that the city is getting on that money still in investments. In the city's investment portfolio, sorry.
So the budget amendment that you have before us doesn't disperse the money to the clinic. It only moves it from one account, the which one is it? The surplus, the undesignated surplus, sorry, and moves it to the accounts within our general ledger for awarding grants or making money available to nonprofits, not necessarily just grants, but money available to nonprofits. So we're just making that money available. We are not, you know, we're not.
I understand that. Yeah.
So I'm sure whatever investment dollars we were getting, and I'm getting the nod from Clay. Yes, it is invested. We are still getting interest on that funding.
Great. Thank you.
Roger.
Yeah, so another question. I spoke with you outside because I didn't want to blindside you, because this possibly could be considered an aggressive question, and I don't intend it that way. So I warned you ahead of time. But we do have some things provided medically here on the island privately, and I'm specifically referencing eye doctor and dental. We have, I think, at least two dental dental private practices. And you explained to me that you're required to offer dental for a specific reason, but financially, for monies you get, and I get that. But again, as we spoke privately, just I would encourage you to work with private people, because I have a hard time subsidizing somebody that goes and steps on private enterprises' toes, whether it's in the medical field. You know, we have to be careful with the city dock, because there are other docks in town. You know, we can't sell fuel because there are other fuel suppliers in town, and I could go on and on. So that is a concern of mine, and we did speak privately. I appreciated your response, but I want the public to know that we're cognizant of that there are private medical suppliers out there that we're not trying to shut down or give you an unfair advantage. Thanks.
Correct. And I'm working. I met the new business that came in town and took over down below. And we had a physical therapist that retired. We didn't choose to refill it, to fill that vacancy. There's chiropractors in town that provide that service. My goal is not to duplicate services. What we have now is great, but again, I didn't know there was a eye doctor that came to town, because we spend a lot of money to bring in our eye provider, you know, once, twice, three times a year. That if that need isn't there, we could save again, that'll cut some of our losses because we don't make any money when we do that. It's just a community service. So again, I'm trying to learn as I'm on the island what we currently have here, and I'm excited to work out MOUs with the dentist in town because, again, when Dr. Joy's on vacation, we have somebody we can refer to, and then when the odd month or even months when the dentist is gone, then he can refer to us. We can make it. My goal is to take care of the community. Again, honestly, if it makes sense not to have the service, you know, why bring in an ophthalmologist to, you know, to provide that service, and when we're losing money, when we can just have, you know, refer it out. So again, we got to have the MOUs in place. That's, again, learning the community, making, building those bridges. So I reach out to everybody in the community that, you know, I haven't talked with, and again, we'll work out MOUs, again, what's best for the community.
My only comment is that I'm in total support of this ordinance. This is, you know, the clinic is a critical part of our community. I don't know how many lives it saved. I know I was, they saved me twice, and so, you know, I think this is something that is, we've got to keep the clinic operating and operating the best to its ability, and I think this is the critical importance to the community to have this facility. And you know, I've served many years on the clinic board in the days when we had cabanas and when the clinic was on the Unicef plant, and probably 15, 20 years on the clinic board through the years. So I know firsthand the struggles that you see and all the financials that we've seen through the years. So I really have a love for the facility, and that we've got to keep it supported for the betterment of this town. Thank you. Okay, anybody else on the council? Okay, public comment. Okay, James, do you have any closing remarks?
No, I just appreciate everybody putting this as a forward thinking and trying to keep us, again, as a, remember, it's a safety net, it's not a blank check. And I think, again, that was the worry at the first, when we first kind of talked about it. And again, I'm hoping, again, I'm not much of a betting man. I don't like going to get to casinos and stuff because I want the sure thing. So this is my gamble, is that we don't need it, but it's there in case we do.
And we all appreciate all your efforts on, and your board's efforts on getting the getting this on sound footing for this facility. Like I said, it's critical to this community. Okay, we're going to move on. Did Nancy, you didn't have any last thing on this one that we were going to?
The only thing, we can discuss it when it comes up as an ordinance, but it appears to me that there's not, that the council is desiring that any funds that are dispersed to the clinic through this process, that it be done as a grant and not as a loan. Because this is the first part of making the money available. We've done the budget transfer. On the December 12th meeting, we'll be bringing back an agreement, a draft agreement for the council approval that will outline the terms and conditions. You know, what are we going to use for a basis of proof that the funding is needed? You know, reconciled bank statements, what are those things? So I'm just looking for a little guidance from the council that you want us to go in the direction regarding the any funds that are dispersed will be in the form of a grant versus a loan.
I know we have had members of the community that have spoken to me that were thinking if we had a, you know, long-term loan, or and maybe they didn't have to make any payments for the first 5 years or something like that. So there has been some comment out in the community that way, and I know Mr. Robinson has probably heard the same stuff or has the same comments. So I think we, you know, I don't know for sure where the council is, but it sounds like there is some interest to maybe look at some payback options that wouldn't really hamper them right now, but possibly if they get on their feet, then some revenue could come back. Dennis?
yeah, at this point, I just don't want to see the clinic become another city department. So I'm fine with a grant or a loan,
okay. It,
either way.
Yeah.
Just, I don't want to see it as another department.
Okay, Roger?
Well, and since this is a work session, and I mean, I guess we could speak to it later, but I'm tending to favor the full-out grant and not a loan, and that's, I'm weighing it, but that's
okay.
Where I'm at now. Thanks.
Jim Fitch, you want to weigh in?
Well, I just looked at management to give us the insight on whether we should do the loan or the grant. It needs to be done either way, and that's, it's a good thing.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Dave?
Yeah, I favor the grant. I think it's important that the city puts their 2 cents in here, and we've got skin in the game that we want the clinic to succeed, and I think it's important that the public know that. And I think a grant is a good way to show that.
Okay. Brian? Bong?
I agree. I think the full $500,000 for a grant. And it's just a safety net to start with anyway, so I fully support this.
Okay, any last comments? It sounds like the majority is in the grant.
We'll case. Bring back an agreement aimed in that direction.
Okay, that takes care of the fourth item in the work session. So now we're down to item number 5, Title II revisions. And Council, if you have your memo, we're kind of have staff work us through the starting on the bottom of page 1, the different sections, and then depending on what we get here when we come back to second reading, I have some possible amendments that could be made that we've got a kind of a cheat sheet depending on how discussion goes. So. Nancy, why don't you get us rolling on this?
You bet. So the ordinance that you have before you later in the meeting is very similar to what you've seen in the past with a couple of exceptions. And so if we follow the memorandum in the first page there, I'll outline those as we go. But the first item is those items that were talked about from the ad hoc committee, brought forward from the ad hoc committee, and that are deal with council section of Title II. So the creation of a vice mayor position who would be a city council member and appointed by the city council following a regular municipal election on an annual basis. The only new information you have in your packet this time that you haven't seen before, we haven't changed the ordinance language, but Mrs. Veter did have an opportunity at the clerks conference to talk with fellow city clerks and find out what are other communities doing. So she surveyed the clerks, and 15 clerks in Alaska, 14 of them have communities that have a vice mayor or a mayor pro tem that serves all year long, not appointed on a council meeting basis. So there's 10 communities that the deputy vice mayor serves for a year, 2 that the vice mayor serves for their entire term of office, and 2 communities where the vice mayor serves at the mayor's discretion. But in all 14 of the communities, the topic was addressed in their code of ordinances. So just for a little more background, that it is a common thing that other communities have, just for your consideration. So, Mayor Kelty, so do you want to just discuss that particular item? Okay.
If anybody All has right. any comments, like I said, I'm the one that brought the committee brought this forward. I think, to me, it's not really a major issue, but it kind of sets in place who's going to be second in command if the mayor is not around, and like I said, I've seen it in most communities, and Margie's comments kind of put that out, and it gives a little recognition to somebody that's possibly been a long-term council member. You know, there's no compensation involved, but I don't really see a problem with it. Council? Dennis and then Roger.
The system we've had appointing a member at a council meeting seems to have worked well for us. And bottom line is if both the mayor and the vice mayor were out of town, we'd fall back on that system anyway. I mean, it's redundant to me to create the position just for a name. I'm not in favor of seeing this on here at this point.
Roger?
Well, I tend to agree, and my reason is that we're not like a lot of other communities in that, I mean, in my time here, I think in a previous iteration as a council member for Dennis, I think I've seen everybody here be mayor pro tem at some time or another. And so if one of us is, I'm sorry, I haven't seen Jim Fitch. See, I don't see him, so we need the bobblehead. I haven't seen him as mayor pro tem, but he's only been on the council a short time. The point is, whoever's appointed vice mayor at some point is going to be gone with the mayor, I think more frequently in our community than any other. So I don't think we're really solving any problems. And I'm against new codes not doing anything, just adding language to a code just to add language. And that is my opinion, but that is my opinion. So thanks.
Okay. Dave?
Yes, I wondered if we could ask Ms. Veter if they were, in your survey, did people give some compelling reasons for going with a year-long pro tem versus not?
I didn't really go into that. I just kind of surveyed them, and it was by email, whether or not they had a vice mayor or deputy mayor position and how they were appointed and whether it was codified. That was basically the only questions we asked.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm not real strong on either one of them, but I just wondered if, you know, most of the other communities are doing it, maybe they know something. And I don't know from your standpoint if working with two people instead of perhaps four or five people as the mayor pro tem, if that would make a difference and make it easier or not.
I don't think it would change my job much.
Vaughn?
I think I agree. Especially if whoever's available on the meeting, whoever's around, if whoever we put in there is not around, somebody who's going to be on the meeting anyway. So I don't see the advantage of putting somebody else's name in there, because most of us, sometimes are gone at the same, inadvertently, but whoever's around and whoever got more years on the council usually get appointed to be a pro tem anyway. So,
Dave?
Yeah.
So I also like the fact that all of us get to have the opportunity to be the pro tem, and you know, in the past we've always just said, well, whoever the senior person is, but I'm almost thinking maybe we should just have some short straws or something, and at the start of the meeting it's like, all right, you're up, bud.
No, there is, you know, it is, I see that point, that this is good training for new council members to get the gavel and run a meeting. So that is a positive, leaving it the way it is. Anyway.
Mr. Fitch.
Jim, do you have any comment?
Well, yes, I hate to be the dissenter in this, but when I first was learning about this, I didn't really see the point of making any changes. It's been working the way it works. And generally the senior person who's at a council meeting when the mayor's out of town becomes the mayor pro tem. But after talking to some of the staff at the city hall and also talking to people at the AML that have vice mayors, I think it's probably a good idea, because if it's not just about the council meeting, there's other functions that the mayor does. For instance, if people come to town that need to see the mayor, or business leaders that want to talk to the mayor, or there's a function that the mayor needs to go to, for instance, talking at a graduation commencement, then you know, and everybody knows who the person is for a length of time instead of, well, who is it this week? So I'm in favor of having a vice mayor.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, well, we'll see if the amendment carries when we get to first reading. Nancy, did you have your hand up?
No.
Oh, Dave, did you have your hand up?
Oh. Maybe I had mine up. So just as an example, so if you choose not that you don't want this language in the ordinance, it's just the amendment would be similar to I move to strike, delete section 2, and it will delete all of that language. So just to give you an example as we go forward. All right, so section 3, adding the compensation for the council members for standalone work sessions in the amount of $250. I believe at the last meeting, it appeared that there was not support to do this, but we thought that that it was important for the council to strike that out of here, not just show you an ordinance that didn't have it. So we do bring that back. So your comments on section 3.
I think it was almost unanimous last time. Anybody change their mind, speak up, including Jim.
Okay. Nope, I'm good.
Okay. So that will be.
That's one that'll be needed an amendment?
Yes.
Okay, what's our next section?
Section 4 is a clarification of attendance requirements for council with a vacancy, and it's just clarifying that language that is that's currently in the code.
I'd like to see that one struck. If a council member is not going to be missing 75% of the meetings, what would happen if that person in a business or his job missed 75% of the time? I think they need to really weigh on whether that person needs to attend or continue to be on council. So I mean, I don't know that that's necessary in a change that from our current ordinance.
David?
Yeah, you would think that that would be what they would say, but without this change, there's no way for us to say, look, you're not meeting these attendance requirements. You it says it in code that you need to either attend or not attend. So I think it's important that it is codified in our code.
Okay. Aaron, did you wish to have the floor?
Quick, yes.
Through the manager.
Quick point of clarification. Right now what's in code is that they, if a member fails to attend 75% of the regularly scheduled meetings, this wording would add at least 75%. So basically it's just a clarification. So when we're, scratching our heads of more or less than, it's greater than 75.
Okay. And so I think it's just a clarification from what I've understood and the way I read it.
Yeah. It adds the words at least.
Yeah, at least. And you got to remember, we also have the call-in provision too. It's available. So, okay. Dave, one more?
And just a clarification, there are circumstances where somebody's ill or,
critically
that,
ill
that,
or something.
That there are exceptions if there are outstanding circumstances.
Yeah, and the chair could take care of that. Okay, next one.
Section 5 is eliminating telephonic participation in executive sessions by council.
Council discussion? This is something I think we had pretty good support for last time we looked at it. Dennis?
I think that's a good one. It's because we don't have control over who's on the phone on the other end and in the executive session, so I think this one.
Okay. Jim Fitch, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I agree with this. In fact, I just had a kind of a reverse situation. I couldn't get on, and then I got on as Dan was calling me on my other phone to tell me I could get on. So I agree with this.
Okay. Nancy, let's go to the next one.
All right. So Section 6 and 8 adds a definition of duties of sergeant-at-arms and assigns the duty serving as sergeant-at-arms to the Director of Public Safety.
No comment? Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
Section 13 and 14 adds compensation for the planning commissioners in the amount of $100 per regular or special meeting, not to exceed $200 per calendar month. And at this time, the commission does not receive compensation.
I think we were unanimous in supporting this one last time. Jim, if you have a comment, speak up.
No, I agree with this.
Okay.
I think it's good.
Okay.
And then Section 16 clarifies the conflict of interest rules when voting on the budget to allow a council member to vote on the total budget as a whole.
So this will be, we won't have, won't we still have the problem if somebody's on a nonprofit?
For that particular budget, but when it comes to the budget as a whole, they can then vote on the total budget as a whole.
So it'll be different from what we did?
Yes.
The thing that happened for the last three or four years.
Right.
I think, Ryan.
Yeah.
Bong?
I think I agree with that one, because we are pretty much related to everybody pretty much in this town in one way or the other. And it's pretty hard to approve a budget when you can't vote and you don't have enough people attending the meeting sometimes. So I think that's pretty important.
Okay, we're going to the next.
So the next section is different from the previous ordinance. And we took a look at this in-house. What we were trying to accomplish with the interim succession, naming who is the interim director of public works if the public works director is gone, it was all in the response to a need to have that for the emergency preparedness definition. So when we activate the emergency operations center, if the director is not in town, we know who to go grab. For that instance, we had it spread out originally in the code in the different department sections. We realized that it fits better in the emergency preparedness section of Title II, so that's where we would like to place it. So we just, that succession hasn't changed what you saw previously of who is designated. We just put it in the emergency preparedness section so it's easier to identify and follow.
Okay, any questions or clarifications? Hearing none, we'll move on to 17?
Okay, so section, following the memo, section 7, we're talking about legal and insurance representative recommendations is in this grouping. So section 7 clarifies what may be added to a council meeting agenda. And the guidance on how directives may be given to the city manager and recommendations from the city attorney in this particular area to remove potentially conflicting language. And so since Brooks is here tonight, he can speak to this if you need any other clarification, but or any of us can.
Brooks, any comment on Section 7?
Good evening. The language that's in the current draft is something that resulted from an analysis we did of legal questions that arose in connection with previous directives that were issued by the council in early October, if I recall correctly. Like a lot of things, you know, you work with a code for years and nothing ever gets put under the microscope, but what these particular provisions got put under the microscope. Events caused that to happen, and when I looked at it, I came to the conclusion that there really was a way to make it much more clear what could or couldn't be done, and that the way to do that was to delete a section of the this particular subsection of the code that didn't really match the other subsection. So the idea is to provide council clearer guidance on how we're dealing with directives to the city manager, and also to make the code sort of match what my understanding has been with regard to what's what the historical practice was for directives to the manager.
Okay, questions for Brooks on this? Dennis?
Yeah, I was looking this over, and we're adding language that directs the city manager, some of the things that are prohibited in the adding of this, basically, like we had at the last, or at a meeting a few weeks ago, the two directives. That is, from what I learned, is part of the Open Meetings Act, and it's a direct violation of the Open Meetings Act in both cases. And I got that from two different attorneys at AML. When you introduce something that has not been previously talked about or not on the previous agenda, is a direct violation of the Open Meetings Act. But I think I see that as basically strengthening it and bringing this out. So I think that's important.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's the case, but that's the Open Meetings Act requires reasonable public dive into the weeds of what has to be on an agenda or not. That's usually left to the local government itself to decide what the rules are. And so a lot of the communities I represent, as does Onalaska, they have a process, and it's set out in their code of, how does something get on the agenda and how can an agenda be amended and various things like that. And it's not something where the state of Alaska dictates to a local community what they
Okay, and you can't add, the way I read this, you can't add anything that has to be an action item added to the agenda, correct?
Right, the concept was trying to weave through the difference between a directive and a quote, action item.
Right. Okay, no, I think this cleans up the problem we had real well. Any council members' comments on this section?
Okay. So the
9 through what?
Yeah, we're following. Okay. I apologize, Mayor Kelty. I've been following the memo and the different grouping. So section 15 and 17. These are what we perceive to be housekeeping items. The first one is clarifying the bonding requirements for key positions, and the second one is updating the definition of document. So those items are also in Title II. So if there's no questions on those. So the last section on Title II is the Department of Public Safety organizational structure revisions, and I have been, since I've gotten here, trying to evaluate, understand, how we got here, where we're going, why we want to do the changes or propose the changes here, and I want to show a few slides here, Margie, if we could. Okay, I'll give you the mouse. Sorry. You get it started. No. So the changes as currently reflected in this ordinance would add the fire chief as a direct report to the city manager. And when I looked through, and as I got used to sitting at the desk in there and really understanding working with the department directors and how much time that takes and, what we're doing, we already have 10 reports to the city manager, and adding the fire chief adds 11. And a typical span of control, 5 to 7, is 7 is a significant number. The biggest challenge I see with the proposed recommendations in Title II is it looked at the Department of Public Safety, understand that we're, you know, our goal is to beef up and support the fire division. But we looked at this change in isolation of just the Department of Public Safety and not what the impact to the overall city structure, organizational structure would be. It looked like a fine change for there, but it impacts the total organization. So I think that the changes, any changes that are made need to be looked at more globally. So this is a fast one. So my understanding of why this was brought forward and what we were trying to accomplish, what was the goal we were trying to reach, was enhanced operations within the fire division. Attract and retain a highly qualified chief to provide leadership to this division. Well-trained staff and volunteers to respond to emergency, make sure we've got adequate resources, and make sure we've got preventative programs in place. That's what we're trying to achieve, but the goal, that was our goal. But what really helps us to achieve this goal is, I talked to a former chief that was offered the job recently, but declined it. And we talked about a wide variety of things. And one of the reasons that he declined it was he didn't see an opportunity for upward mobility in the department. It's going to take a cut in pay to come back, and there was no opportunity for him to grow. So it doesn't make a lot of sense in a professional career to make that decision to come this direction. So one of the things that I'm just throwing out as a possibility, I'm not saying that this is exactly what you should do, but if we look more globally at the department and more globally as the overall structure, is one possible solution would be to consider changing the structure in the Department of Public Safety to have a director of public safety and then have a police chief and a fire chief, and remove the code requirement that the DPS director shall also hold the title of chief of police. The job requirements would just need to be that the department director is either a certified police officer or a certified fire officer in order to have access to everything that they would need within their department to manage it. It could facilitate a much better balance of oversight for the overall department. And it's not just police and fire, it's emergency preparedness, it's corrections. There is a lot of work within that department that if there was a position that wasn't wedded to one particular division, they have a much more global look. So this is just one instance that if my recommendation is take a step back and don't implement the changes right now, but give the new city manager an opportunity to look at the total organizational structure of the city. Develop recommendations for changes that are needed to strengthen the overall organization as well as the departments and the divisions, and let them bring forth future changes to Title II through the FY19 and FY20 budgets. You have to go back to, or I ask you to go back to looking at this structure, and you're not effectively managing the organization to just add one more report to the city manager. Understand, and I hear whether the focus and what some of the was driving this, but give the new city manager an opportunity to evaluate the overall structure of this organization and know that they'll know where we're trying to get to with supporting all of the divisions and supporting all of the departments equally, and how can we better do that in an overall structure. So my recommendation is to not implement the Title II changes to the fire, the Department of Public Safety, and task your new city manager with exploring a full range of options.
And I thank you, Nancy, for bringing this forward. I think it's changed the way I was thinking, and I appreciate it. Council discussion? Are you done? Mm-hmm. Sorry. Okay. Council discussion. Dennis?
I think that's a really good idea.
Dave Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Former yes. fire chief for 25 years.
I am in full support of this. You know, as I, you know, having 10 people or 11 people report to one person is way beyond the span of control. We should have looked this years ago, probably, that, you know, it's just too much. And I think, you know, if we wait for our new city manager, we've got a new fire chief here that's going to be working on this issue. You know, we can look to some of the other communities across Alaska to see how they do this kind of organization. And I think it's a good way to go forward. Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it.
Roger.
Yeah, I'm certainly in support, and I can't help but think back a few meetings before you came on board, Nancy, and someone asked our assistant city manager, well, why can't you just do both jobs? And I distinctly remember her answer, I already have a job, you know, and I got it at that point that there's a lot going on there. So, yes, this is for me as a simple person, the visual is awesome of seeing it all laid out there. Thank you. I support pulling this for now and letting the new city manager attack it right out of the gate.
I just would add, this is going to be a huge undertaking. This is not simple because, you know, just moving the fire chief to the city manager caused some pain. Any reorganization is going to change the structure. There will be pain associated within the organization to do this. It's not just shifting titles. So I just ask that the council have patience and allow that evaluation and make sure that you give the city manager adequate time and resources to do that. Because it'll be a big change for the organization. Could be a big change for the organization.
So. Long, you have a comment?
Yeah, I agree. I think this looks good. And the more information we get after this, it'll be probably better. So I think it's worth the wait and get more information for us. And I think we'll be moving on the right direction on this.
Jim Fitch?
Yes, I'm in full support.
Okay.
I think it's an excellent idea. I don't believe in busting up the departments.
Thank you. Roger?
Yeah, so just for clarification, make sure I understand this. This would be, we would amend it to delete section 9, 10, 11, and 12, or just 10, 11, and 12 and leave the DMV contract?
When we get under, when this comes up under new business for first reading, I've got a cheat sheet here for
thank you.
Motions.
It is all of those. But.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll hand out, I don't know, we'll have free for all and making amendments. Okay, I think that's it. Time for the public comment. Okay, silence. We will adjourn our work session. Can I get a motion, please?
I'd move to adjourn our work session.
Second.
Got a second? Okay. Any objection? Hearing none, we are reconvening back to a regular meeting. We have nothing on the consent agenda tonight. We have one item under unfinished business, which is up next, and that is Ordinance 2017-14, Budget Amendment Number 2, second reading, up for adoption, creating a budget amendment to transfer $500,000 from the general fund budgeted surplus to increase the grants to nonprofits to help fund the Ilya Clinic Health Services IFHS Emergency Assistance Support Request. Can I get a motion?
I move to adopt Ordinance Number 2017-14.
I'll second it.
We have a second by Roger. Nancy.
I don't have anything else to add. As just mentioned in the work session, we will bring back an agreement at the next meeting. So.
Okay. No further discussion by council. Madam Clerk, can we have a roll call, please?
Fitch?
Yes.
Coleman? Roland?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
Gregory?
Aye.
Ordinance 2017-14 passes 5-0. Okay, new business. We have four items under new business. Well, actually, we still have five.